You're listening to episode 20 of LangFM, a podcast about the wonderful world of language, interpreting, and technology. My guest today is Linda Saukorauta, a sketchnoter based in
Jyväskylä, Finland.
The interview was recorded in early February.
A couple of minus degrees and then some snow, so now it's quite mild and it's actually a nice sort of winter day. Quite normal compared to, let's say, a couple of weeks ago when we had like minus 25 or minus 30 even, so that was rough. The wind was blowing from Siberia.
Up in the north, Linda started out as a language teacher.
So actually my major is Swedish, so I used to teach more Swedish than English. And then also I taught Finnish for our foreign students.
And then became an e-learning designer.
I tried to help the other teachers to develop their e-learning materials and courses and ways of teaching. Some of them were really enthusiastic about the things that we were working with, while the others were more sort of restrained, so to say.
Eventually, though, the doodles she drew in work meetings led her to set out as a freelance sketchnoter.
It was a hard decision for me to change into entrepreneurship.
We'll talk about all of those things and more in today's episode, so keep listening. And you told me your languages are Finnish, English and Swedish. Did you learn Swedish as a child already? Is that part of the school education?
No, I just picked up it in school. So Finnish is my native tongue. And then at the age of 9, I started learning English. And then at the age of 13, Swedish. And then after senior high school, gymnasium. After that, I went to Sweden to study. Actually, I studied English in Swedish together with Swedes. So I got both languages in a way.
Interesting, yeah. Because I wasn't quite sure, because I think there are minorities in Finland that speak Swedish and a Finnish-speaking minority in Sweden as well.
Yes, there are. Yeah. So that's why everybody has to study Swedish in school. All the Finnish-speaking kids, they have to, you know, study Swedish. So that's what I did when my time came. And then I kind of was interested and drawn to languages, so I decided to study those in the university level as well. So actually my major is Swedish, so I used to teach more Swedish than English. And then also I taught Finnish for our foreign students in the end of my teaching career. Kind of had the other perspective to my native tongue as well. You know, working as a Swedish teacher in Finland, it has got some rough times because there are people who don't necessarily want to learn something that they are forced to learn. So it was a bit rough at times. So I got bored with it and then wanted some change and then started that position as an e-learning designer, which was fun.
Yeah, because we had the same thing with Russian before the political change in 1990. Everybody had to learn Russian, and it must have been very difficult for the Russian teachers to get people, you know, enthusiastic about learning Russian. And of course, everybody forgot everything once they didn't have to learn Russian anymore. So
yeah, and then there are some freaks who, you know, like the language.
Exactly, yeah.
Now, I don't know why that is with the Swedish. I mean, it hasn't been always like this. I mean, people used to like it, but I guess it was in the sort of the late 1970s when they made it, you know, obligatory, and then, you know, back in the 1990s probably it started out so that people kind of didn't just want to do it anymore. There are studies that show that some like it a lot, and then there are studies who show that, well, except like boys at the age of 14, they don't appreciate it that much.
Yeah, but the reason why we're having this conversation is that I'm really interested in what you're doing, and what you're doing is sketchnoting, and we're going to talk a little bit about what sketchnoting is. I learned about it for the first time, I think a couple of years ago, on the internet and seeing people doing sketch notes for conferences and that kind of thing. But before we get into the nitty gritty, maybe you can tell us a little bit about how you got into sketchnoting. I think it all started with you just doodling in meetings and just making simple drawings, I think.
Yeah, it has got to do with the change of the position, as I told earlier, so that I quit my teaching job and then started as a designer. And that meant that I actually had to sit in a lot of meetings and more seminars than I used to. And I mean, as a teacher, you get to move around and, you know, be active in classroom while, you know, just, you know, sitting and listening. It gets boring, as you know, probably. And then I guess most of the people know. So I just, you know, I have always been doodling. I have always drawn and doodled, you know, back in school days, my school, you know, books, they were all kind of, you know, filled with characters and pictures and images and cartoons and characters and so on. So I just, you know, started doing that again in a workplace environment. And back in 2010, I guess, when I started my new job with the e-learning, I also bought an iPad. And I was kind of wondering what to do with that. And I tested out different drawing apps. I had been testing out sort of those drawing tablets that you connect to computer, but I didn't like those that much because you lost the hand-eye connection. So the sort of the drawing line was suffering badly. But once I got an iPad, that drawing thing, that started to be fun again. And then I just, you know, started doodling and then, you know, doodled my notes and scribbled my way through meetings. And then suddenly people who sat next to me, they started saying that, well, this, you know, kind of sums it up nicely. So can you please send that JPEG to me? So that's what I did. And yeah, that's how I started out with it. And then at the same time, I surfed around, you know, the internet and there were people who called themselves graphic facilitators, and they shared pictures of something they had done, and it kind of resembled of the things that I had done. And I showed them my images. Well, is this graphic facilitation? Well, not really. This is kind of like graphic recording or something like that. And then I Googled around and found out that there's a term called sketchnoting that is used in America.
And sketchnoting is sort of the umbrella term for all those things, or is that the way you would describe it?
Sketchnoting is, yeah, it's kind of like probably a name for some sort of like personal notes. There's always some kind of a personal experience that you bind into the notes. A graphic facilitator is more of a facilitator, sort of brings, for example, a meeting towards a goal and so on, whereas this is more organic. And as I say, I put my own thoughts maybe sometimes into it, and how, what kind of thoughts kind of rise from the presentation that might also be included there.
Because there are a few interesting terms there around the field. So there's visual listening, I think, visual thinking, real-time drawing. But I mean, the basic idea behind it is to record what you hear and draw it, and maybe draw also associations or links that you see maybe to other things.
Indeed. Kind of, how would this look like if I draw a picture of it and then I draw a picture of it? Yeah, that's the thing.
But it must have been nice back then when you did all those drawings and then you finally discovered that there's a whole community out there and other people who do more or less the same thing or that do similar things.
Yeah. What I've understood, it started out back in the 1960s, somewhere in, you know, San Francisco area, where a bunch of hippies thought it would be, you know, useful for, you know, some kind of a new way of learning, sort of visual thinking as an aid for education. And then it has spread around. And I guess in the recent years in Europe, I think the Danish have been quite active with this, and then probably the Dutch as well. And then, of course, some in London, in Great Britain, I think there are also active doodlers. And then now also I think Finland is also kind of, we have a small community in a way of people who do this. A couple of that I know in Sweden as well, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how did that happen for you? I mean, how did it develop from a hobby into something that you do more or less professionally, basically?
It actually started out with, you know, some basic comic strips. My life as a Swedish teacher was very dull and very, you know, filled with anxiety. So I started out doing cartoons of that mundane life as a Swedish teacher in Finland. And I shared my cartoons via my blog. And then I got a couple of requests, offer requests. And I actually had my company running already. Because of that, because I needed to, you know, be able to send bills to those customers, those early customers. But I also knew that I couldn't make a living out of it because I'm not that good of a, you know, I don't have that good of a drawing technique when it comes to, you know, making cartoons. But anyway, it was fun. And it was just basically a couple of accidents that got me into business. I guess the biggest accident was back in 2011, when the Nordic Business Forum, the sort of the biggest business event seminar in Finland or in Northern Europe, they had the seminar in Jyväskylä here, and they had Al Gore. They brought Al Gore to Finland. Those sort of young guys, like under 30, kind of like 25 or something. One day this Hans Beth, that he actually just, you know, phoned Al Gore's office. So, can you come to Finland? Oh, sure. Basically, that was a story. But anyway, hard work, but it's a nice story. And anyway, they organized this huge business seminar in Jyväskylä, something that was kind of never seen here. And the students of our university, they were actually working there at the seminar as volunteers. And they also asked us teachers and staff, could you be able to, you know, join our staff as a volunteer? And I actually volunteered for some driving action. I was ready to be a chauffeur for some VIP guests. You know, I was like, yeah, hybrid Toyota, why not? And then we had some training for the position, so I drew sketch notes in that training session, and then I shared those notes together with my other driving colleagues. And then the organizers, they asked me, they saw the sketch notes and they asked, what if your volunteering job would be to sit in the front row and, you know, just doodle all the presentations? Sure, happy. So the first time I did, I was sort of volunteering for that one. And then I shared the, you know, the sketch notes in my blog and then tweeted about it. And next week or a week after that seminar, then the sort of the business people started phoning me, do you do this? Do you do this for a living? Do you do this, you know, for companies?
Can we pay you to do this?
Yeah, I had my company running already. So I was like, yeah, sure, why not?
Okay, cool.
So since then, basically, I have done it, you know, as a side business. But then a couple of kids and a couple of maternity leaves, you know, the Nordic system, long maternity leave. So I had my calendar, you know, free. So then I was able to, you know, run it as a whole-time business, which I do nowadays.
I'm wondering, are you nervous at all when you get to, I mean, when you go to the conference and they pay you to record the sessions or to draw those sketch notes? Are you nervous at all that you're going to miss something? Are you ever nervous that you're going to, you know, understand something maybe in a different way, that kind of thing? I'm asking this from an interpreter's perspective, so that's why the question comes up.
Of course, sometimes when it's a question of a bigger event, you know, not every event that I go to is a Nordic Business Forum. There, of course, it's kind of extra special because it's a huge event and it's a huge marketing place for me. And if I do mistakes there, then, you know, the top speakers from America will notice how bad I am or something like that. But there, of course, I'm nervous, and in some other events, if I'm, for example, connected to a projector and the whole audience of 500 business suits see me, you know, do something that I'm not supposed to do, then probably then. But otherwise than that, no, not really. I have learned to, you know, take my time and probably also my years as a teacher, you know, to be in front of a class have taught me something.
I mean, it sounds quite scary, actually. I read that on your blog that you sometimes hook your iPad up to a connector, and then everybody can see what you're drawing in basically in real time, right?
Yeah. So it's happening more and more nowadays. Actually, my first gig ever, that was at the Yonk University. I mean, my daytime job. My first gig ever was actually that way. So I was connected to a projector already in the beginning, and it worked out really well. The doodles itself, they weren't back then, 5 years ago, they weren't that good at all. Actually awful to see back now. But I mean, it worked really well because I was kind of connecting with the audience and also responding to the things that the speakers said and so on. So the feedback was very good already back then. But more and more people and companies, they want me to, you know, show what I'm doing, because it kind of also makes it extra special for the audience. For example, if they're trying to talk about a company head is speaking about, let's say, economical details or strategy, it's often quite abstract. So they want to make it more concrete by showing what I do, and the people tend to be amused by it.
Yeah, I read this one anecdote, I think, on your blog as well, where you, I think the session was getting close to lunchtime and everybody was hungry and the speaker would still go on and on and on. And then you would, I think you draw like a little figure that said, I'm hungry or something like that.
Yes, I did. It was my alter ego that was thinking only nothing but lunch. And, you know, the audience, they just bursted in laughter and the speaker kind of, what's happening? And then he you know, saw the white screen. Oh, it's lunchtime. Okay. And then he quit and we were able to get some lunch.
But he was okay with that. He was not offended or anything.
No.
That's great. Excellent. So do you do any preparation? Like, do you think of, I mean, when you get the topic for a conference or a meeting, do you think of how to draw specific things? Do you prepare any symbols or stuff like that?
To some extent. I, of course, Google around for the speakers. I mean, who they are, what they have been speaking about. And if it's a huge event like Nordic Business Forum, I also tend to listen to some podcasts or check out some videos so that I'm able to, you know, grasp their accent. I guess that's probably something that the interpreters also do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's why I'm asking about it. Yes.
Yeah, so I do that. And then also I kind of wonder what kind of a presentation it's going to be. If it's going to be a panel discussion, that is quite clear that I'm going to draw it the specific way, you know, the talking heads and what they are saying, you know, from the or using the canvas in a special way, or if it's going to be a discussion of two people, for example, then I have a clear strategy for that one as well.
And I think you also have a bit of a routine when you get to the location of how you prepare. So I suppose when you're connected to a connector, to a projector, sorry, you'll have to sort of check that everything works on the technical side, and you probably have a look around the conference room, that kind of thing.
Yeah, of course. The advantage of working with iTools is that they normally work pretty well. You just, you know, plug it in and then there you have it. But yeah, I want to sort of find a suitable place so that I have space for my right arm, because when I draw, I of course use that one. And then I have to also check that they have long enough cables from the projector to the place where I sit and so on. So yeah, the technical preparation, that doesn't take that much. It's normally so that the organizers tend to be more in you know, panic when it comes to having a real-time doodler in the house, whereas it's pretty easy for me.
And another question, have you found yourself listening to interpreting at a conference? Have you been to any multilingual events where you had to rely on interpreting for the doodling?
No, not really. I have been working in conferences that are international, but all the presentations have been in English or Swedish. So I've been able to work with my own language skills there.
And how do you know what's important? I mean, is it intuition, the things that you pick up and that you then put on paper or actually put on the iPad screen?
Well, I have been around for a couple of years now. So when it comes to, for example, business seminars, I pretty much know the, for example, the marketing jargon or the marketing language or the things that they are speaking about, so I kind of know what they are going to say. But also when it comes to people and, you know, people giving presentations, pretty often they say the most important things, you know, in the beginning of the sentence or in the beginning of a, you know, some bigger chunk of information. So if you're really alert in the beginning of that chunk of information, then you get it, then you grasp it. And then also kind of the rest of what they say is just, you know, packing up that information.
Now, since interpreters also take notes sometimes in meetings, also for their actually working technique, are there any tips that you have maybe, or anything that you can recommend if somebody wanted to maybe get more into sketchnoting and maybe adapt a few of the strategies for their own technique? Because I think there's a number of basic shapes, I think, also that you can employ.
Yeah, sure. So it's the basic circles, the basic boxes, and, you know, speech bubbles and stars and different types, the kind of different fonts, if you would like to say, so hand-drawn in different ways. And then there are, you know, the characters. You might want to develop your own kind of character. Mine are kind of like those box-headed characters. And then there are other versions as well that people use. Then there are dots and lines and underlines and, you know, highlighting shadows and everything like that that go together with comics and so on. So basically comic language. And then you combine text and images and you know, icons and so on.
Interesting. Is there a book maybe that you can recommend, anything in specific?
There are a couple. I think Mike Rohde, his book was pretty good actually, because it had sort of some actual examples of sketchnoting, and also it had got those kind of like patterns or forms that you could use when you start your sketchnote. I mean, if you start from the upper left-hand corner or from the center, or do you probably use it, you know, the, you know, the upper center point as your starting point and so on. So that's at least one book that I have taken a look at. But then there are others as well, if you go and Google around, you know. Yeah. Kind of like visual thinking and handbook and something like that, then you might find.
But I think the Mike Rohde book really is very good. I had a look at that and it seemed very interesting, even for someone like me who would say, I have no idea how to draw. But I think that's something that you really have to get over yourself in a way and just start doing it and just practicing.
And he was kind of the first ones to use the term sketchnoting, I think, out there in the internet. And he was, you know, happy to share other people's work as well. So some of my work is also being shared and covered in his blog and so on. So I think he was also one of the main kind of people that got me also into sketchnoting in a way.
And you said that pretty much from the beginning, you've been using an iPad for your sketches and for your notes.
Yeah, for all the time. I haven't actually done any sketchnoting with any Moleskine notebooks or pens. Of course, back in school days, my notes were probably that way, but no, not as an adult, no.
So can you tell us a little bit about the applications that you use? Do you have any preferred apps or maybe also styluses, if you can speak to that?
Yeah, well, my iPad is just a normal iPad Air 2. And then the app that I use for drawing is still nowadays Adobe Ideas, which I have been using all these years. I have tested out other tools as well, and I have to change my drawing tool from Ideas to something other pretty soon, because they are not developing it anymore. They are not updating it anymore. Instead, they have this Adobe Draw, which is a free app that you can download and start using, but it's not that good. It lacks some features that the Ideas has, and also I don't like the zoom in it. The zoom feeling is different compared to Ideas, and it's not that smooth. It's sticky, and you know, when you're drawing fast in a seminar of real time live dueling, it just gets, you know, me into trouble if I use that one. But I have to make that change pretty soon.
Okay, yeah. It's difficult if you've been using that specific application all those years.
It is. It's very difficult. And I know that I'm getting into trouble, but I should do it. So those. And then the stylus pen that I'm using is just a regular soft tip bamboo stylus, bamboo solo. Yeah.
Yeah, those tend to be recommended a lot. Yeah, they're pretty good, I think.
Yeah, I've been testing around different styluses throughout the years. But I just, you know, haven't found any better one. I use one with a hard tip for when I create animated videos. I use a it's an Adonide Chopped Pro with a hard tip. That I use nowadays for the video activities. But, you know, real time dueling I do with Bamboo Solo.
And so you do those explainer videos as well? So animated sketch notes, basically, or how does it work? Yeah.
In a way, yeah. Yeah, so I draw and then my drawing is taped on video, and then we make it go faster and edit it and add sounds, and boom, we've got an animated video.
Interesting. Yeah, I really like those, and they're interesting to watch because you can sort of see the whole process and how the sketches and notes take shape. I really like those videos.
Yeah. So there aren't actually that many who do those, at least not in Finland. So so we are kind of trying to hit to market with our little videos.
Excellent. Yeah. Have you checked out the new iPad Pro and the stylus from Apple?
Yes, I watched the launch and I actually drew sketch notes while watching it. Just this week, I actually held one in my hand and kind of felt out what the weight was and so on. And it's huge, actually, the iPad Pro. It feels pretty huge in my hand. So I guess I'm not going to buy one for the real-time live purposes when I'm away in seminar, because there it would be just too big. But I guess I have to buy it for the video purposes, because there, the more surface you got, then the better it gets.
Yeah, it's a bigger canvas, right?
Yeah, in a way, yeah.
I just found the stylus to be very, very good. And because the problem that I had with the traditional styluses was that you can't really put your hand on the screen, because then you get all the smudges, and that wasn't really an issue with the Apple Pencil. So that I really liked.
I haven't tried out that one, and I've heard that if you want to buy one, then you have to line up for it for 6 months or so before you get one.
So it can take a while, yeah.
Yeah, so I haven't really had my chance yet. Would be fun to test out, really.
And then when you're done with your work, either you're connected to the projector, or you would then send your sketches to the organizers and they use it for their conference material or for their brochures, or?
Yeah, I actually already beforehand, before the seminar starts, I already send a Dropbox link to my customers, to the seminar organizers. And during the seminar, during the event, I upload my images into the Dropbox, so they're able to, you know, go and get them already when the seminar is happening. So they're able to use them right away as, you know, marketing aid and so on, marketing material. And that's what they do. Pretty often they do that. So they go and you know, take the image there and tweet it out and use it in their blog and so on. In Nordic Business Forum, I actually have access to their blog. So what I do is that after each presentation, I directly upload the sketch note into their blog. So it's kind of instant thing, and then they tweet about it then.
Yeah, very interesting indeed. And you also share quite a bit of your material on your blog. I think you have a portfolio blog and also on Twitter.
Yeah, it's a messy portfolio, but it's a nice blog, I guess. Yeah, more and more of my customers want me actually to share the work that I do. Of course, some strategic doodling, that's something that the companies don't want to share. But you know, quite often they want me to share the things that I've done for them. Also, probably because, you know, social media and that stuff, they want, you know, the busy there.
It's good content, I guess, from their perspective.
I guess, yeah. It makes people, you know, people want to take another look at it, you know, probably because of the details and so on. And it has got sort of many sides to it when it comes to, for example, real-time live doodlers. So there's, for example, the audience who are present. So they get sort of a special moment while they watch how the image is done. And also they remember then back after the seminar, they remember in a better way what was spoken about. The speakers, they like the images a lot because then they can see if their message is, you know, is it come true, if people have understood it.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but it's a good point, yes.
Yeah, they really love it, you know. And also they are quite often sort of a me person. So they love the idea of seeing their own words, you know, as an image.
Yeah, for posterity and eternity.
Yeah. So they really want to share, you know, always, and they want to use it, and they want it for their own purposes. And quite often you see after a seminar, a speaker has changed their cover photo, for example, into a sketch note. So the speakers like it, and then the organizers like it because they get marketing material. They get, you know, instant visibility in social media also during the event. And basically there are, as I said, many sides to it. And then also people who are not attending the seminar, if they're checking out, for example, the Twitter feed from the distance, they also get an overall image of what has been, I mean, what has been presented, or what, you know, what the seminar is all about. So they also like my doodlings. I'm happy to share them, and I'm actually happy if they use the material, because every gig that I do is also marketing for myself.
I really enjoyed talking to Linda, and it was interesting to see all the overlaps between sketchnoting and interpreting, like this one.
It's hard to explain them what I do. It's hard to, you know, speak about it, what I do. And probably there are people who listen to this and they don't have a clue about what we're talking about. Because it's hard to explain. But once people see it, once people see me in action and doing it, then they sort of get it and kind of like, wow, is that something that you do for a living? Yeah.
At some point, Linda even tried interpreting herself.
I actually tried out some interpreting back in my studying years. I took a course. I tried out that one, Swedish, Finnish, and it was very difficult, and I couldn't do the simultaneous. I'm able to do it image-wise. I just draw what I hear.
While she did go with sketchnoting in the end, she still likes to keep in touch with interpreters.
For example, in Nordic Business Forum, where they have the, you know, the interpreters sitting in their booths, we actually bond, because we're actually kind of doing the same thing. It's like interpreting.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, please subscribe in iTunes on your computer or in a podcast app on your smartphone or tablet. Simply search for Lang FM and never miss another episode. Also, a review is much appreciated. Thanks for listening, and talk to you next time.
Bye-bye.